Hey, Chris.
Hey, Spencer. How we doing?
Good. How are you?
Fantastic.
How's Florida life?
You know, no complaints here, but time's winding down here. Last few days, but the journey's not over. We're heading up to Boston for a week.
Nice.
Oh, I shouldn't make that sound. You're gonna run with that.
So, Chris, I think we wanted to talk this week a little bit about design systems, but I think more specifically how that kind of fits into like the product development lifecycle, how that kind of works collaborating between engineers, product design, and anybody else that might be involved in kind of that lifecycle. So what are your thoughts kind of on like how we can best maximize the value of a design system?
Yeah, that's actually really timely and kind of spicy topic for us right now, as there's been a little bit of contention around the system we have in place. I think it's what we have has enabled the team to move relatively quickly. We've gotten some huge like productivity gains out of it, and just the system as a whole feels a lot more cohesive because of the work we've done to build the system. But largely, that's all come from collaboration between engineers and designers, like the ICs on the team. And as a result, I think we're starting to see some issues where bringing in new designers and scaling the team, and especially like we're contracting out a fair amount of design work and getting designers productive while working within the constraints of our system. It's a challenge just to get people up to speed to even know what all we have and how to work effectively with that. But then, say you're on a 6-month contract with us. Is it even realistic to think about all the work we might need to do to kind of onboard a designer to get them, on the same page and working in a way that like feels cohesive with all the other designers on the team who are here full time? But we definitely just seen there's been a little bit of contention around, you get mockups that don't use what's in the system. And then somehow those get signed off on. I think, we've both been involved in projects where we've said up front, hey, we don't have this in the system. What do we want to do here? We can like use the building blocks we have and get this done quickly in the kind of original timeline that we estimated, where we actually would, build things using the components we already have. Or we can do some extra work to create this like one-off component, or we go through the project of modifying the existing component. But there's a whole lot of work that goes into that, depending on how widely that component is used in other areas of the application. And a lot of that work ends up falling on engineers. Like if it gets past the design review stage, it ends up falling onto the engineers, I think, in a lot of cases. And when you're trying to move quickly, it's like I think our team in particular has reached for the existing building blocks and just shipped, what we could quickly. And then, the designers and product are like, why does it look like this?
Yeah, I think we kind of talked about that briefly in maybe a previous episode of how our kind of existing design system or our design system today kind of formed, and that it was pretty organic in the sense that we kind of saw this pain as engineers that we were repeating ourselves a lot, or that there's just some minor inconsistencies, and it didn't really make sense for those design inconsistencies as well as code inconsistencies to like exist. So we started to componentize those. So I think maybe there's a lot of historical context of like engineering driving a lot of this and not really talking about it more holistically as part of like the product development life cycle with product and design. But I think recently a few designers have been contributing directly to the design system code base, which I think really up levels it from a design sense, making sure that like the padding's right, the color's right, hover states, focus states, a lot of minor details like that can easily get overlooked in mockups. I think one of the first things to like get overlooked in mockups are like focus states, hover states, loading states, error states, edge cases, all of those that a lot of our components kind of handle. But because of that, that's kind of like what an engineer decided at the time should kind of get put into those. So I think, like you're kind of saying, there's a lot more we need to improve on it. But I think just starting to get more input specifically from design so that they're part of it and helping actually build and contribute to it, so that when they're working through these designs and like using these components, they know exactly what to expect. And then also on the flip side of that, exactly what to like not expect from them, or like know where the shortcomings are. And then even further, being able to say like, no, we're intentionally not using this component because it's like not the same thing, or it's like doesn't deliver the experience we need, or something kind of along those lines.
Yeah, I think everyone can buy in that, you know, product design, development, everyone agrees that this is a good idea. Like, we shouldn't build things twice. It's just, how do you manage the trade-offs between the constraints that you've put in place and like wanting to stay fresh and like provide a first-class user experience? I think it's been particularly challenging for us as we think about, you know, the needs of, you know, our employers and our university staff who have much more complex workflows. Like, they pretty much live in like tables and forms. And like on the student side, we want like a much more like consumer type of user experience. Like, just the expectations around the UI are different than what we see on the university and employer side. It's also harder to get feedback from that customer segment too. Like, employers and university staff, they just, you know, they have to use the product and they provide a lot of feedback. Sometimes, you know, it's very easy to keep a pulse on like what they want. They're very eager to give us that feedback, but on the student side, it's a lot harder to get that. For whatever reason, we have many more student users than we have university staff and employers, but you know, they're not as bought into kind of using the product as the other sides are. But anyway, I think everyone sees the value in these things. The key that I think we've been missing is just minimizing the kind of like the feedback loop, like tightening the feedback loop on design. Like, with some of our contractors and everything, it's like we don't find out what's like in their heads or what they're thinking about until it's already like relatively high res, like high fidelity mockups. And when that's the way you're working, it's really hard to go back and say, well, actually these 10 things don't come from like anything in our current system. then you have a whole bunch of extra work. If you had just identified things earlier on, I think you have a much better, like, it just minimizes the effort overall if you kind of incrementally get to the finished design. And I think for us, we need to do a better job of just tightening that feedback loop, and maybe even getting to the point where, you know, either engineers are involved, or we're thinking about things more like the wireframe level and leaning on the system to just kind of fill in the UI. Like, let's just talk about like the components, the elements of the page that we need to do the job that we need, and then you can rely on the system. Or, you know, we need a way for designers to be more involved in making some of the revisions to the components that they need. Like, we've been talking a lot about prototyping with components, building a prototyping kit that designers can use to actually, you know, build things in React, and then they can fiddle with, you know, the revisions to our style sheets that they want to make, and they can see how that impacts the entire system rather than just thinking about things in isolation, where it's really hard to see the impact on the entire system when working within, you know, a sketch document or whatever. I actually think there's maybe some ways to remedy that, like using like having like a shared symbol library and stuff like that, but I don't know how you get things like, you know, padding and margin on elements and can see what that looks like unless you're actually building with the components.
So one thing that you kind of were mentioning there is that we have a single design system that's shared across the entire company. And I think that definitely made sense when we first started building it out, when then we were like a handful of engineers, and like that worked perfectly fine for the place we were at as a company, as the like products we were building. I think that definitely made sense. But like you were saying, as we've grown and as the kind of different sides of the business have started to diverge, and the users are very different, have very different needs, like very different UIs. Having a shared system at this point then shared across all of those sides of the business can be somewhat challenging, particularly because we have like very different user needs. So I think we kind of taken the first step of at least isolating our design system from like our shared monolithic code base as we kind of explore breaking those different sides out and those different products out to their own applications. But I think that might then have an impact on how we kind of build our design system, and maybe thinking about it, how we can tailor it to the different sides of the product or our different types of users. Some who need a much more like administrative dashboard versus more of a like consumer facing type of UI. So I think there's a lot of interesting tooling that we could eventually explore, a lot of interesting approaches. But I think at a base level, like a lot of our design system has a lot of fundamentals that we would still want to be shared across the product. Maybe some simple examples would include like layout building blocks, or maybe even like a modal. I could imagine maybe the fundamentals of a button, like all of the functional details, we would probably want to be the same, handling loading states, disabled states, accessibility, things like that. But then maybe it's just the UI layer, which today we're using like CSS modules in React, which works really well, but maybe we'd explore a tool like styled components or some other CSS and JS solution that kind of has the idea of theming kind of built in, or maybe we would explore our own version. But I think some degree of that in allowing theming, and maybe it would even be taking an approach kind of like, I think there's a lot of components in a library called Reach UI, which the intention of that library is to build the fundamentals for, at least the way I understand it, is to build the fundamentals for accessibility with very little or no like UI or visual opinion. And then you can just kind of drop those in and get all of the accessibility and then make it match your needs. So kind of imagining something maybe like that could work. And then how this might look if we fit it into our kind of design system repository today. Today, it's just a single repository. It all gets built into a single package. We could then, if we wanted to kind of tailor this to the different sides, we could explore using a tool like Lerna to use like a monorepo. So then each directory can be its own package. So maybe we have like a package for every side of the business, or maybe we even take it a step further and have a package for every single component, and you only include the components you need. So I think there's a lot of potential there for things we could explore. But again, all of those add additional like tooling, additional overhead, additional costs, but that could be well worth it if it means tailoring the experience to our users and providing a better like UI.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are some great strategies for dealing with this. And I mean, that they're very actionable, right? Like if you're getting feedback that, you know, in this use case, you know, this doesn't fit our needs. I think for us in particular, with like multiple teams and different expectations across different customer segments, this is a pretty good solution for us. For other people or like other types of products that aren't, you know, like a three-sided marketplace, they may have very different concerns. And I would think in a lot of cases, probably is like just making sure you do the work to keep iterating on your system to make sure that it is kind of meeting all the use cases, like assuming you just have you know, one type of user. I don't see much reason to reach for something like theming or anything like that. But as you think about, you know, I think another thing for us is like new applications, like we're building up all kinds of like administrator apps and things like that, in which case we definitely, maybe not so much on the theming side, but maybe you don't want to import every component from our design system. In that case, maybe you want to think more about each component getting its own repo or like making its own package, so you can kind of pick and choose what you want to pull in from the entire system. But yeah, I think those are all great options. So one question I had for you is, I think you've had to deal with some feedback that just the design system is too constraining. Like, how do you think about that problem and like resolving that? Like, if engineers are, you know, in the middle of a project here, they see mockups that are, you know, we can't implement this with the components we have. Like, what should be there at their thought process?
That's a trigger. That's a trigger question for me.
Or what's your thought process?
Yeah, I think this phrase or question is really interesting. Hearing what, I mean, this commonly comes from like designers who feel like the system is too constraining. But I think it's interesting hearing a designer's perspective on that when they are very like aware of the design system and its benefits and its shortcomings and like where it can be useful and where it cannot be. I think there's like very two different perspectives, but both coming from like design. So it's kind of interesting seeing those two different, I guess, perspectives or outlook on the systems, like the systems improving our speed, improving our consistency, so they don't have to keep reinventing the wheel, for example, like the button component or a card component. But I think at the same time, almost the point of the system is to be constraining. But I think it can't be too constraining where it like locks us into one way of doing things, not open to change, and kind of like getting stuck. But I think at a high level, a design system is to constrain you from exploring 30 different variations of cards, 30 different variations of buttons, re-implementing it every time, having all of this like additional code complexity for doing almost the same thing in a bunch of different places. So it kind of helps rein some of that in. And in my perspective, allows you to spend a lot more of that effort and time doing more creative work of like trying to build this new feature or solve this new problem and not trying to solve the border radius or the box shadow for the 18th time. So I think that's kind of the way I've looked at it, but I think it is important to like continually like evaluate that question and in determine, is it too constraining because it's just like the system and like we need to modify it a little bit, or is it because like we've kind of gotten stuck in a rut, I guess, and need to kind of evaluate like, is this really the best direction for like the product, continuing to use this, and like do we really need to kind of reevaluate our design system? So I think when we kind of get to that point of what the actual situation is, I think it kind of comes down to three things, I guess, that really can be determined just by talking through it and communicating what the actual intention was. So I think the first one, that my default at least, which maybe is not always the best default, is to use the system. I operate under the assumption of if you're using a button, you're using the system button. The next step for me is, oh, this is very close to the button we already have, but it doesn't quite handle this variation or this like functionality. So then my next step is to modify the system. And this is going to modify it globally. So this has potentially like far-reaching effects, maybe a little bit riskier, but then you're at least still in the system. So the next time this component's color changes, this feature that we're working on now will continue to be consistent with the rest of the product and kind of follow along with that. And then my last thing that I'll fall back to is one-off. So like one-off it, maybe this is copying some of the code and like simplifying it or changing a little bit, or maybe this is just something that like has no reason to exist in the system. And I think the first time you one-off it should definitely be one-off. And maybe by the second or third time, you're like, oh, this is a pattern that's starting to emerge. Probably going to want to use it in other places. We want it to be the same across all of these. And then maybe at that point, evaluating whether or not that one-off, or I guess like three-off thing now, should be part of the actual system. I guess those three buckets are kind of how I think about the different pieces of the UI and how it fits into the system. And I think some of the problems, or at least some of the struggles, can be when I operate under the assumption that, oh, we should always be using the system unless otherwise specifically noted that we shouldn't, might be a little different than what a designer is thinking that we should always one-off it unless otherwise noted to use the system. So then coming from those two different perspectives, you can get varying results for those perspectives. So I think that's sometimes where using the system versus one-offing things can kind of break down in that sense.
Well, yeah, thanks for talking through that. I know that's a little bit of a loaded question, especially for you, since you've been kind of dealing with that feedback a lot lately. But I think it's interesting just to see how people, how someone kind of in the trenches and, is working through some of this. So, but yeah, I think that's all we have for today. So I guess I just want to kind of recap some of the main points we had here. Yeah, I think that, you know, everyone is going to buy into the fact that like having a design system is a good thing. There's a lot of, I mean, the benefits are like, you can't argue about the benefits or like the value of having a design system, but it is a lot of work to maintain. It takes kind of understanding and collaboration across all three teams, you know, product design and development. And there's the more you can do to kind of minimize the feedback loop, the better. I think we're working towards a future where, you know, we are able to do things like prototype with components, empowering designers to code, to see some of the roadblocks that engineers are hitting right now, trying to implement designs. And that's just, I mean, all that is tightening the feedback loop. It's giving designers an opportunity to see the roadblock and actually work around it while they're coming up with a design, rather than, you know, them designing something, engineers, and then those decisions kind of getting pushed down on engineering when they're ready for implementation. And so, I mean, it just allows you to address those concerns and work through those issues a lot earlier in the process. But when you do run into issues, which you inevitably will, and I think Spencer, you give a few very concrete, you know, options to work through that. But when you do inevitably find yourself at a crossroads where you already are in implementation mode and designs have been signed off, I think you have a few options. You can do the work to, you know, collaborate with design and work through all the issues to actually update the system. You can just use the system and accept that, you know, you're going to take speed over matching the mocks to a T, or you can think about creating a one-off component. I think there's no right option all the time, but I think those are the three ways that we've worked around this issue.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's a great summary of everything we've kind of touched on and all of our general thoughts around this. So I think that's it for this episode. Show notes for this can be found at rubberducking.fm/14.
Constructive criticism can be sent to Spencer at joinhandshake.com. 5-star reviews could be submitted on iTunes. please, we'd welcome any and all feedback. Please feel free to reach out to us, hosts@rubberducking.fm. Thanks to those who have. It's been great to connect with some people who are listening to the show and get some ideas for future episodes.
Squeaky.
Until next time.